Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for July of 2021. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. Of the dates to remember in July, the 4th, the birthday of our country, is the easiest to observe. This year, because the 4th is on a Sunday, Monday the 5th would be a national holiday. Because of the easing of COVID restrictions, there will be large gatherings of people. We should be careful when we venture out into crowds. On July 2nd in 1926, the United States Air Corps was established. The Korean War ended on July 27th of 1953, and World War I began in 1914 on the 28th. Have you ever asked what's in season? July in North Carolina ushers in a time when we're able to enjoy many locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables. And here's a short list of the items you can find at farmers markets and in grocery stores. Green beans, butter beans, cabbage, cucumbers, kale, mustard greens, turnip greens, field peas, and green peppers. In July, there may still be some blueberries available. There are. Sweet corn, eggplant, summer squash, and tomatoes arrive during this month. And for a couple of months, one can enjoy as many tomato sandwiches as you like. It's a time for cantaloupes, watermelons, and fresh peaches. Enjoy them while they're in season. In mid-June, we learned of the closing of Crook's Corner, a cornerstone in Southern food and an early spark in the creation of the Triangle's modern dining scene. This icon of seasonal Southern dishes, torchbearer for shrimp and grits and Chapel Hill mainstay, announced the closing in an email. "With a heavy heart, I must share the news that we are closing," the restaurant wrote. "A position we find ourselves in, exasperated by the COVID-19 crisis, is no longer tenable." Crook's began as a Franklin Street Fish Market in the 1940s, but in 1982, Chef Bill Neal and Gene Hammer opened a small restaurant that would alter the world's understanding of Southern food, cooking dishes tied to the seasons and treating regional vegetables like treasures. Crook's elevated the reputation of Southern food. Suddenly, fine dining included dishes like fried catfish or stewed okra and tomatoes or peanut soup. A bowl of Crook's shrimp and grits had been a favorite Southern dish for 40 years. Following Mr. Neal's death in 1991, Chef Bill Smith took over the kitchen and led the restaurant for nearly 30 years until his retirement in 2019. Hamer sold the restaurant to a group that included former Crook's beverage director Shannon Healy and Gary Crunkleton. "It was the food of this place," Mr. Healy said in a phone interview. Bill Neal carried the idea that Southern food was worthy of celebration as any other food, and this was the underlying premise that Southern food was as worthy as French food or Italian food. Mr. Healy said he first fell in love with Crook's as a diner, eating a plate of oysters that changed his life. Unlike the gummy, chewy, and fried into oblivion versions he knew from growing up in Florida, these were barely fried, crunchy from a cornmeal breading, and still creamy like a steamed oyster. "It was a revelation to me," Mr. Healy said. "They were using aioli and calling it garlic mayo. They were taking fancy food and making it approachable. It was an ethos that I really loved." Even in retirement, Mr. Smith would sometimes find himself back in Crook's kitchen in some fashion or another. Most recently, he made the season's batch of honeysuckle sorbet, filling the restaurant's freezer with the sweet late spring gold. "That's probably my favorite dish," he said. "No one has ever done anything like that before. It's mysterious. It doesn't make any sense, but it's delicious." The truest cook dishes are those that dance with the seasons, like the honeysuckle sorbet, which Mr. Smith would often forage for thousands of blue blossoms. In the summer, fans could look for Cook's dish of cold fried chicken and a thick slice of watermelon. In the fall, wild persimmon pudding that seemed to taste like the first chilly nights of the year. Mr. Smith said seasonal cooking also meant improvisation. taking whatever showed up at the back door and putting it on a plate. It was a kind of seat-of-the-pants cooking, Mr. Smith said. Farmers would just show up at my door with two bags of tomatoes, and so I served tomatoes that night. The menu was completely fluid. The first restaurant job James Beard Award-winning Mississippi chef John Currents had was in Cook's Kitchen, where he was initially fired as a busboy. He was later rehired as the dishwasher and quickly worked his way through the kitchen, happily pitching in with the prep cooks, chopping pounds of mushrooms and scallions for bowls of shrimp and grits at dinner time. He said Bill Neal's obsession with food taught him to appreciate the gift of peppery arugula and appreciate flavor. It was at Cook's he got his first dish on the menu, a deep-fried French toast, which is still served in his Big Bad breakfast restaurants. Cook's was the first restaurant to really legitimize the Sunday supper of the low country, Mr. Kern said. Prior to that, it was unheard of. My grandmother ate at the restaurant and was astounded. We saw a plate of pimento cheese for $4.50. Pointing to chefs like Mr. Kearns, Mr. Healy said the impact of Crooks is felt nightly in restaurants throughout the South. Generations of restaurants can trace their lineage back to Crooks, Mr. Healy said. It's had enough of an impact, its legacy is well protected. It always hurts to lose what we once considered almost a part of the family. Doctors say the pandemic has hurt children's eyesight. Many kids are emerging from the pandemic with vision problems, doctors say. The primary culprit, they believe, is increased screen time. Eye doctors say they are seeing more children, many of whom are in virtual school with new and worsening prescriptions for myopia or nearsightedness. Rates of myopia in children were already increasing globally before the pandemic. Some research suggests that the past year has made the problem worse. Doctors also report more cases of digital eye strain in kids. A leading theory behind the rising myopia rate shows that when children look at screens or books for prolonged periods of time, the eye adjusts to accommodate a close focus, which may change and elongate the shape of the eye, leading to myopia. Likewise, decreased outdoor time may increase and worsen myopia as people tend to look further away when they're outside. Natural light and physical activity outside may also play a role. Adults don't tend to experience significant worsening of myopia because eye growth generally stabilizes after childhood. We know that focusing up close and not being outside has increased the rate of myopia, said Julie A. Haller, an ophthalmologist at Wills Eye Center in Philadelphia. There's been a huge impact from the pandemic, she said. In a January study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, researchers in China looked at myopia rates in more than 120,000 homebound children during the pandemic and found the prevalence in children ages 6 to 8 increased up to 3 times compared with previous years. Doctors in the U.S. report similar increases. Allison Babouche, a pediatric ophthalmologist at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, says she's had many kids coming in with worse vision. We're seeing a big jump in their prescriptions, she said, of her patients. Some children are progressing to high myopia. Children and adults with high myopia are at a greater risk of developing retinal holes or tears, as well as conditions like glaucoma and cataracts. There are reasons why we don't want people to have myopia, the doctor said. There are some treatments for children that appear to be progressing toward high myopia or a family history of it that involve wearing special contact lenses as well as an experimental treatment that uses low-dose dilating drops, she said. It doesn't stop the progression of myopia, but it slows the progression. Megan Collins, a pediatric ophthalmologist at Johns Hopkins Wilmer Eye Institute in Baltimore, says the children she's seeing with new or worse myopia are often the ones who are in virtual school. I've seen some younger children last year. When I saw them, they had no significant refractive error, Dr. Collins added. Nothing that required glasses. Within a year, they've had a pretty substantial change in their vision. The earlier one develops myopia, the greater the risk of developing vision-threatening eye conditions later on. One recommendation for slowing the progress of myopia is for children to spend at least an hour a day doing physical exercise outdoors. And here are some suggestions on how to keep your kids' eyes healthy. Encourage them to spend more time outdoors. Some doctors believe outdoor time prompts the eye to look further away, which may help reduce myopia risk. Outdoor lighting and physical activity may also contribute. Adopt the 20-20-20 rule of thumb. Take a 20-second break for every 20 minutes of screen time by looking 20 feet away. Remind your kids to blink while they're looking at the screen. Studies have shown that most people blink less than half the rate of normal when staring at the screen. In early June, we learned that Raleigh's beloved Players Retreat will reopen. Instead of serving beers before a Carolina Hurricane game, one of the Triangle's most popular sports bars was running a COVID vaccine drive. This is what the road back looks like for this storied Raleigh bar, the Players Retreat. When the 70-year-old institution near NC State University opens up later this month, it'll require a vaccine for indoor diners. From the beginning, we've said we'll not be able to reopen until we can figure out how to feel safe, owner Gus Guzzler said. The only way to do that and serve people in the two main rooms is for the entire team to be vaccinated and require vaccines for guests. We're not going to put our team at risk. Mr. Guzzler said the policy is meant to protect employees and customers, as well as his wife Doris, who has respiratory illnesses. He said he also believes the policy will put other diners at ease. It's kind of a business decision, he said. There are still a lot of people who are not comfortable going into a restaurant to eat. Now they know they can come in here and everyone is vaccinated. The Players Retreat plans to reopen on June 23rd, serving in-person guests for the first time in 15 months. At the beginning of the pandemic, Mr. Guzzler pledged to remain shuttered until a vaccine was widely available. That's a pledge the Players Retreat has maintained, knowing it left at least a year of sales on the table. He said he's excited to welcome back Player Retreat fans, and he hopes the vaccine policy is short-lived. We've been closed a long time and need to make money, he said. This is a temporary thing, but maybe by fall we'll feel more comfortable opening up. But right now, I can't do that. Part of this is to encourage people to get vaccinated. The Players Retreat hosted a walk-up vaccine drive at the bar with doses administered by Raleigh Clinic, the neighborhood health center. Mr. Guzzler said a couple were waiting in line when the event started. People who were vaccinated at this event also got a $20 Player Retreat gift card. For people who had already been vaccinated, the Players Retreat is registering customers at the restaurant by showing their vaccine card. Those who register will get a Players Retreat button that says, I'm vaxxed, and be eligible for a drawing for a $1,000 gift card. If you have the button, you can just walk in, Mr. Guzzler said. Beyond the vaccine policy, he said the restaurant removed glass windows along the outside and installed new collapsible windows that can be opened up, just trying to get fresh air circulating. For those who haven't been vaccinated, outdoor dining will be available. Welcome back, Players Retreat. Chapel Hill chef Dan Jackson is the latest Triangle culinary star to appear on the Food Network. Mr. Jackson is the executive chef of the new Chapel Hill restaurant, Osteria Giorgio, was to compete on Chopped Tuesday, June 15th. I always wanted to do one of those cooking competitions, he said. The reason I got into cooking was more of the athleticism of it. You have to move behind the line and think on the fly as a line cook. You have to use your movements and know what pan to grab and what needs to happen. Chopped, the long-running Food Network culinary competition hosted by Ted Allen, features four chefs cooking surprise ingredients with the worst dish in each round, sending one chef home. Mr. Jackson spent most of his career in New York, including stints in Danny Meyer's restaurant group and 2 years at 11 Madison Park, one of the top kitchens in the world. The competitive nature of fine dining appealed to him, he said, and working at 11 Madison Park was like being on a Chicago Bulls team led by Michael Jordan. It taught me to play up to the level, Mr. Jackson said, of working for famed chef Daniel Hum. That experience helped me in my career, showing me how hard you have to work in this industry to be successful. Just like any kind of sports competition, if you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. CHOP producers first reached out to Mr. Jackson in January of 2020. He filmed a biography video for the show and prepared to compete in March. Then the world fell apart and the COVID-19 pandemic ground television productions and the restaurant industry to a halt. Mr. Jackson was later laid off, and he and his wife moved back home to his home state of North Carolina at the end of the summer. Mr. Jackson, a Chapel Hill native, was hired to lead Osteria Giorgio, the latest restaurant from the prolific triangle restaurateur Giorgio Batcascus. It opened in the spring at 201 South Elliott Road in Chapel Hill. But before then, CHOP reached out to him last fall. He drove through the mountains to Knoxville, Tennessee, where his episode was filmed last November. The episode had a futuristic theme, he said, imagining dishes from the year 3000. Without any spoilers, Mr. Jackson said he's at peace with his performance. I've always wanted to prove myself to the people I grew up with in this industry. Mr. Jackson attended the prestigious Culinary Institute of America. That's not to say one competition defines you, but I always wanted to win and don't like to lose. Following his appearance on CHOP, the restaurant will feature one of his dishes from the June 16th episode. There will be a double dose of Triangle Chefs on the national food scene following Pitmaster Chris Prequito's appearance on Barbecue Brawl, a new barbecue competition show also on Food Network. The first episode, a 90-minute special, aired June 14th on the Food Network. Mr. Jackson joins Pizzeria Toro's Chef de Cuisine, Maria Thurman, as Triangle Chefs to appear on CHOPED in recent years. Ms. Thurman's episode aired in February of 2020, ended with her taking the crown. We wait to learn how well Mr. Jackson did. I want to share with you an article written by B. Wilson, whose column Table Talk appears in the Wall Street Journal. It's appropriately titled, "For Summer Cooking, the Secret Ingredient is Temperature." It begins, "Traditionally, the way to serve melon in France was to put it in a bucket down a well for an hour or more before dinner, making it ice cold. On a summer's evening, the colorful fleshed melon would be served as a refreshing appetizer by itself, or perhaps with a few slices of dry-cured ham. A ripe melon was seen by French eaters as a feast, so long as it was cold enough. The temperature at which food is served is a vital ingredient to any meal, yet it often gets forgotten. Many cooks serve all foods steaming hot until summer comes around and urgently reminds us of the charm of salads and cold soups. There is a particular thirst that kicks in on a summer evening that can only be quenched by an icy bowl of gazpacho, a Spanish soup made from tomatoes blitzed together with sweet peppers, garlic, good olive oil, and a tang of sherry vinegar. It should be served as cold as a martini. There's a particular pleasure in eating food at a temperature that contrasts with the weather outside. Whether it's a cooling breakfast of creamy Greek yogurt and honey in August, or a warming stack of pancakes on the first chilly morning of the fall. In Ukraine, the beloved national dish of borscht, beet soup, is adapted heat to the seasons. As Ukrainian food writer Olia Herculus observed in her new cookbook, Summer Kitchens, at Christmas time, borscht might be enjoyed steaming hot with little dumplings, whereas in warmer months it becomes ice-cold, bright red broth garnished with chopped radishes and a splash of buttermilk. When a dish falls flat, it may not be the seasoning, but the temperature that is to blame. Few people would relish a piping hot bowl of French onion soup oozing with melted cheese on the hottest day of the year, no matter how perfectly the onions have been caramelized. By the same token, I'm convinced that one of the reasons quiche has fallen from flavor is too often it's treated as a buffet food and served cold, which ruins the texture as well as the taste. A case is most appealing when it is slightly warm from the oven and the eggy custard filling is puffed like a souffle. After a day or two in the refrigerator, it becomes dense and leaden. One of the sad things about eating today, especially outside of the home, is that we so often have no choice but to consume food at temperatures that don't enhance it. Our food service system is dominated by refrigeration and the microwave oven, which deliver food that is either mouth-burning hot or robotically cold. There may be sound hygienic reasons for keeping food very hot or very cold, but it can be palate-numbing. The hotter food is, the less you can determine its seasoning and flavors. And the same, strangely, is true of very cold food. A sandwich that has languished in a cooler is much less appetizing prospect than one made only a minute before with warm toast. There's a whole spectrum of temperatures at which different ingredients taste best. I love cucumbers when they're cold and crunchy, whereas I prefer zucchini when they're tepid, preferably grilled and smothered in garlic, olive oil, and mint leaves. A good tomato or peach is best slightly warm, so it can almost feel the kiss of the sun on its skin. The great food writer James Beard described a simple backyard picnic consisting of cold meat and corn on the cob served straight from the boiling pan. In Japan, such a meal would be called hot-cold. Japanese noodle shops serve a udon dish where broth is poured over cold noodles and garnished with scallion seaweed and sesame seed. The noodles cool the broth a little as you eat it. Thoughtful cooking is about finding the right temperature for each element in the meal. The South Korean dish bibimbap is like a study in contrasting temperatures, as Chef Hoonie Kim explains in his wonderful book, My Korean Traditional Flavors. Bibimbap takes many forms, but the classic version includes of steamed white rice, seasoned cooked vegetables, fried eggs, and a spicy red chili paste called gochujang. When the dish is served, Mr. Kim writes, the rice should be warm, the vegetables cold, the fried eggs hot, and the sauce at room temperature. When everything is combined, the dish should be at room temperature. I often think that room temperature is the most underrated heat for serving food. Tepid may not sound appetizing, but as Vianna Laplace and Evan Kielman wrote in their classic 1985 book, Cucina Fresca, The True Flavor of Foods, really shines at temperatures from warm to cool. Cucina Fresca is a collection of Italian recipes designed to be served lukewarm or cold, from roasted peppers to cold chicken with tomato sauce made with canned tuna, oils, anchovies, and capers. The book includes one of my all-time favorite recipes for days when I feel too shattered to cook. The book calls it Pasta a la Caprice. You simply mix together chopped ripe tomatoes, garlic, salt, basil leaf, fruity olive oil, and grated mozzarella. When the pasta is cooked, you toss it into this raw sauce. The pasta becomes cool from the tomatoes, and the mozzarella came warm from the pasta. Perhaps the greatest joy of room temperature dishes is the way they give the cook time to cool off away from a hot kitchen. As Ms. Laplace and Mr. Kielman observed, trying to produce a whole series of hot dishes for guests brings with it the pressures of last-minute execution. While making a few plates of unfussy food in advance is a much easier going way to have friends over the summer, like melon cooks are the best when chilled. What's the temperature in your kitchen? Have you noticed the increased prices in some of the items you purchase at the grocery store? This story may help you understand why this is happening. Campbell Soup Company's pandemic boost came to an end as customers are returning to restaurants and offices where higher costs cut into profits. The soup maker is the latest example of how inflationary pressures are hammering the profits for food manufacturers, which are struggling to maintain sales momentum as more people are vaccinated against COVID-19 and the U.S. economy reopens. Campbell and others are raising prices to compensate for higher transportation, commodity, and labor costs. We're expecting this to be a challenging quarter, but it was made even tougher as these pressures in some cases are more significant than anticipated, Chief Executive Officer Mark Close said in a conference call. He said he expects similar costs to continue to squeeze profit margins in the coming months. Similar to food makers such as General Mills and J.M. Smucker Company, Campbell said it's raising prices this summer to offset some of the higher costs. We're going to be very thoughtful about it, Mr. Klaus said. The last thing we want to do is shut down the growth that we worked hard to have. General Mills said that it expects grocery shoppers to accept the higher prices coming to stores because inflationary pressures are so widespread. On the other hand, Smucker's last week said it anticipates that its higher prices will put a dent in sales volume. Mr. Klaus said Campbell's recent sales decline was due to the comparison to last year's surge in demand for canned food as people stocked their pantries in the early days of the pandemic. Food makers received an unprecedented boost last year from the closure of restaurants, workplaces, and schools that forced people to eat more at home. Campbell, who also makes Goldfish crackers, Snyder's pretzels, and Prego pasta sauce, said its overall retail sales were up when compared with 2 years ago. Its soup brands also gained 2% of the market share, a record for the company. We continue to be encouraged by the sustainment of cooking and eating at home, even as COVID-19 restrictions are being lifted, Mr. Klaus said. On the sales side, consumer survey data continues to suggest that at-home food consumption is likely to remain somewhat elevated post-pandemic. Finally, as Barclays analyst Andrew Laser has reported, the past inflationary periods strongly suggest that packaged food companies eventually come out of them strengthened, though after a lag, once they have been able to push through a price increase. Campbell may be in for a rough summer, but investors shouldn't give up on the whole food sector. McDonald's Corporation is planning to roll out a loyalty program beginning July 8, 2021. The latest restaurant chain to invest in rewards for repeat customers. The nationwide program has already been tested in some U.S. markets. Users will receive points on qualifying purchases that can be exchanged for items like hash browns, McNuggets, a large frappe, or a McChicken sandwich. Other food and beverage chains are pursuing similar programs to promote loyalty and increase visits. Chipotle Mexican Grill has updated its rewards program, enabling members to exchange points for more than 15 options, including free guacamole and drinks. Starbucks, who have long rewarded users who frequently frequent their cafes, says its loyalty program aided its pandemic recovery. The coffee chain says they have about 23 million active U.S. members and 18% increase over last year. Have any of you who patronize McDonald's signed up yet? And this is the time to enjoy. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.